With the help of thousands of scientists and observers across the centuries, our knowledge of the sun and its connection to the Earth has expanded our minds. As we look to the future, we can only wonder what new discoveries await us. I'm Troy Klein, and in today's podcast, I will be talking with Dr. Sten Odenwald, the chief author and editor of the Sun Earth Days Technology Through Time series. During our phone conversation, Sten shares how he acquires the information for the essays and the importance of resource verification. Hey, Sten.
Oh, Troy, hi.
How's it going?
Oh, good.
Now, do you have any favorite essays that really stick out in your mind, Sten?
Yeah, actually, the one that comes to mind is the Ancient Sunlight essay number 50.
Number 50. Let me go to that right now. I'm on the website, which
right.
Of course is at sunearthday.nasa.gov, and I'm in the Technology Through Time section, and I see essay number 50, Ancient Sunlight. Now, as I look down through the article, I'm looking towards the bottom, and there's a diagram on that page. And the caption, it almost looks like a puzzle coming out of the sun. And the caption says, light escapes the sun's core through a series of random steps as it is absorbed and emitted by atoms along the way. And you look at that, and you can see this random path that light would have to take from the core in order to eventually get out to the surface. And then suddenly it's a straight shot, bam.
That's right.
Wow.
In fact, it spends most of its time near the core because the density of the gases near the core of the sun is about equal to the density of lead. So there are, many, many, many times more collisions in the core, and each one of those collisions impedes the forward progress of the light to the surface. Once you get about halfway to the surface, then things go very, very quickly, because the atmosphere is much less dense. But still, when you add up how long it takes to cross each of the shells of matter within the sun, you get something like on the order of tens of thousands of years.
And I'm noticing that at the very bottom of the page under references, I see a reference to an activity on this particular essay, correct? It's called How Old
is
Sunlight?
Right. Yeah.
And that's a classroom activity that you can go to and download.
Yeah, believe it or not, this is a classroom activity that you can actually do yourself. Part of it is, the first part of it is understanding how random walks work. And that's a very, very fun and very basic physical process in and of itself. And for that, all you need is a pair of dice, a gridded coordinate paper, a pencil, and away you go.
Well, one of the things I really want to bring out as I'm talking with you, so people will go and do this, is the gallery. And you can just simply, any article that you click on, and which I'm doing right now, at the bottom of each article is where we've placed the gallery picture. So if you see something interesting and just click on that gallery images, opens up the Technology Through Time and Sun Earth Day image gallery. And you have an entire list of amazing, amazing images that you can, they make beautiful screensavers.
Astronomy is a very visual subject. And, we like to always put our best foot forward. I mean, it's not all, algebra and mathematics and numbers and scientific notation. And we do generate some absolutely spectacular pictures, not only from actual photographs of astronomical objects, but also through the manipulation of equations and things like that, which generate their own imagery, which in many cases is striking.
There's one that I'm looking at right now, and it just really blows me away when we can take a close-up image of the sun or look at data that has been turned into an image and see something that looks like abstract modern art that is real. I mean, and I'm looking at image. There's an image called A Close-Up of a Sunspot Taken with a Swedish Solar Telescope in La Palma.
Yeah.
And it is absolutely dazzling when you look at this image. Yeah. You wouldn't know what that was unless you've been trained.
It's so striking that just have to include it in any treatment of the sun and sunspots. And it's just so startling that, you look at this thing and you're seeing the real detail in a sunspot. This is not an artist's rendition of anything. It's not, modern art. It's the real thing. And it looks, when you look at it, it's like, you almost don't know what you're looking at. It looks so surrealistic, so abstract, like you say. And then when you begin to focus in on details that are, you know, 1,000 miles across, moving at, you know, 10,000 miles an hour, and you actually get into that part of it, it's like, oh, wow, what is this? This is amazing. Technology through time is a vast resource that we've created, and I'm just curious how students would actually wind up using it. I mean, we designed it with certain things in mind, but what is the experience that you've heard of in terms of how people use it?
You know, Sten, there are a variety of ways from the user feedback that we get that people are using this. Of course, classroom teachers are very innovative in taking materials and bringing them to their students. And actually, technology through time is one of those kinds of resources that really lends itself to a variety of ways to raise student interest in science and culture and history. And the whole fact that technology through time, the whole purpose of it is to show how people in ancient times, modern times, and into the future have been observing the sun and seeing the sun as a source of life and energy, and why our relationship to the sun is so important to study. These teachers are coming back and saying, well, you know, some of our students do some reports. We'll have them go to 2 or 3 essays and take a look. And they do research themselves based on some of the links that you provide. And then they come up with their own report that the teacher then takes and grades. But they're also using the imagery found in the galleries quite a bit to enhance the reports. I think a great activity for this would be to, many teachers use PowerPoint as one of their tools.
Yeah.
And these images are downloadable from the website here, so they can basically put these images with the proper credit, of course, in their PowerPoint along with their own words of what the image is that they're looking at. So there's quite a few things.
I continue to use these images in my own professional presentations because...
Oh, I do too.
You know, I spent time, a considerable amount of time, actually finding these illustrations and getting the proper permissions to use them on a NASA website. And now that I've done all that hard work, it's like, wow, now these are available for me to actually use in my own PowerPoint presentations when I go out and talk to the public or to other, you know, professional situations.
Oh, that's right. You know, I have
to tell you, the gallery is just a fun resource.
It's a lot of fun. I love going through the gallery. That's one of my favorite parts of the website. And obviously, the people in our participants and users of the site, that is their number one place to hit, apart from podcasting, which is what we're doing right now. So that fits hand in hand. You know, there's an essay, Sten, I want to tell you about that I really love. And it's one of the ancient observatories ones. It's issue number 21, and it's the one that you wrote up on Hovenweep Castle.
And oh, yeah.
Do you remember that? That was in 2005?
It's surprising, you know, how much Native Americans did with trying to understand the sun, and you know, they tended to use it in a very pragmatic way. They raised, you know, figuring out the seasons to an art form within mm-hmm. their society, and it's just wonderful to see. You know, it's for them, it wasn't just sort of abstract knowledge, but they actually built houses and monuments that incorporated this information.
Well, that leads to a really interesting question: is about where do you get your information? Now, you just answered some of that for us. But let's say in these essays, there are essays in there about current NASA missions that are literally going up right now, some of which have been up there for a few years. And then we have some future missions that will be going up. How do you get that information? I know you're a professional astronomer, and much of this you know.
A lot of the information comes from basically a professional understanding of the subject. Some other types of information that you find, especially in the ancient observatories pages, comes at least initially by doing something as silly as doing a Google search under the keyword of the particular ancient observatory. And you'll usually find documents, some of them very good, some of them very bad. But as an astronomer, you know how to discern what is authoritative language, and you always follow through by contacting the authors of what you find on a website to double-check their real understanding of the subject and to compare, you know, who these people say you are with people that you know and what their opinions are so that you get the most credible information. You'll find many, many pages on Stonehenge. You'll find many, many pages on some of the ancient monuments, Karnak and Abu Simbel. But you're going to find very few of them that really speak with authority, even though they're written extremely well. So that's where the professional aspect of being an astronomer comes into this, is that you have other resources you can consult to make sure that the information that you get is really on the mark and not controversial. We do not publish anything that's controversial on these websites. We only take the consensus view.
Now, I also know from the past and working with you that there have been some times, for instance, if there's a satellite mission that's up there now, SOHO or STEREO or ACE, for instance, that you've been able to talk with people from those projects and also have been able to receive some input from them when it's been appropriate. Is that right?
Yeah, generally the mission pages, whenever we publish anything about a specific mission, we consult the mission website's authoritative, usually their science content areas where they state what their mission goals are. And of course, as an astronomer, you can translate those mission goals into something that's English, and that's
right.
What appears in our web pages. You then always make sure that the essay is sent either to the PI of the mission or to one of the other scientists to basically catch any comments that aren't really what the mission wants to say or the way they want to say it.
That's right.
So, the process goes through your initial draft of it based on the documents that you see, from the mission, and then basically any revisions made by the mission scientists. And then finally it goes into press. So it's, once again, a refereed process of sorts.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, the mission websites are absolutely, very important in order to get these stories straight and to make it easy to get the essential information about them.
Well, what's really interesting in this conversation we're having is we're pointing out the importance of not only finding information and looking for it and learning how to just simply dig and find information, but then how to verify it and cross-reference that information and how vital that is if you are trying to put out a reputable report of any sort. And I know that teachers are constantly reminding students in their writing that they have to verify their sources. And in your case, you, of course, come in with your own knowledge, but also when you're looking for additional knowledge, you're telling us that you'll go out and simply either call the people or contact them and learn more about it and check the credibility of the sources you're using.
It's absolutely vital to check the credibility of the people that are writing documents on the web that you're going to be using in your report.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stress that enough. So the last thing that you want to do as a scientist is to put stuff on the web that that really isn't the consensus view of your community. Now, my own background is in cosmology. I understand solar physics because as a graduate student, I studied solar physics as I did other areas in astronomy. So I know the basic general ideas, and I've been following those stories for almost as long as cosmology. So, that sensitizes you to, what ideas are currently in and what ideas are currently out and where the controversies are. And at the level of the kind of web pages that we write for Technology Through Time, there is no particular reason why we have to present the reader with controversial information.
That's
because
right.
There's so much other information that's not controversial that they need to know. And so that's what we tend to go with.
We are very interested in hearing your questions and comments about the Sun Earth Day podcast. If you have something to say, just send an email to sunearthdaypodcast@mail630.gsfc.nasa.gov. That's sunearthdaypodcast@mail630.gsfc.nasa.gov. Upcoming podcasts will include professional storytelling, highlights from our Technology Through Time series, and our new audio voyage tours. For all other details about the Sun Earth Day program, including information about past Sun Earth Day themes, be sure to visit our website at sunearthday.nasa.gov. Sun Earth Day is a program sponsored by the NASA Sun Earth Connection Education Forum at the Goddard Space Flight Center and at the UC Berkeley Space Sciences Laboratory.
This is Troy Klein signing off.